Hi, this is Lewis Leader at radio station KAZU 90.3 FM, National Public Radio. Our guest today is one of the candidates for Congress in the 20th Congressional District. Congressman Sam Farr decided not to seek re-election, and Barbara Honegger is running as an independent. She's a resident of Carmel Valley. Welcome, Barbara.
Well, thank you, Lou. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Before we get into the substance, let me tell you a little bit about Barbara. She's a native of Hanford, California in the Central Valley. She earned her BA from Stanford. She earned a Master's of Science degree in Consciousness Studies Experimental Psychology from John F. Kennedy University and Master's Level Certification in National Security Decision Making from the Naval War College. Barbara Honegger has a long background in high-level positions in the federal government, including in the Reagan administration. She was White House policy analyst in the Office of the President and project director of the Attorney General's Anti-Gender Discrimination Law Review in the U.S. Department of Justice. She also served at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey as the senior military affairs journalist at the school, which is known as the top science, technology, and national security affairs graduate research university of the Department of Defense. She did that from the year 2000 to 2011 and also 5 years before that. So now you know a little bit more about Barbara Honegger, and we'll find out a lot more. First question, why are you running for Congress?
Well, I'm running for Congress, Lou, and thanks for asking the question and having me here. I'm running for Congress because I honestly believe I'm the most qualified candidate for this position in this race. I'm the only candidate for Congress who actually ran back in 1993, the last time this seat was open. None of the other candidates did. I have very, very high level experience in Washington, D.C., and a track record of fighting for the American people, for literally truth, justice, and the American way, from the inside of the Reagan-Bush Senior White House and Department of Justice, where I exposed a truly unconscionable plan to weaken the enforcement of all 56 of our federal civil rights statutes, including the famous Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I did that. I sacrificed my high-level salary in the White House and the Department of Justice to warn the American people about that and prevented the plan from moving forward. So I'm running again because I'm serious. I'm back again. I'm serious about representing the people of this congressional district. And I'm looking forward to being in Congress so that the American people can hear the truth on the floor of the Congress.
Now, running as an independent is a difficult task in any congressional race, basically, in almost any race. You're running against a Democrat, Jimmy Panetta, Republican, Casey Lucius, another independent, Jack Digby, and a Peace and Freedom candidate, Joe Williams.
Right.
Given the field, given the difficulty of being an independent, what's your best shot at winning? How can you win?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm going to be very frank with you. I'm asking people to vote for me in the June 7th primary so that I can be one of the top two on the ballot. I fully expect Jimmy Panetta to get the most votes. However, interestingly, in this congressional district, there are more independents than there are Republicans. So I am the experienced independent in this race.
You call yourself a true independent. What does that mean?
By true independent, what I mean is that I have a track record of being on the inside of the federal government and exposing truly unconscionable plans by the federal government. I have a track record inside the federal government of taking courageous action. I want to go back to Washington and be able to do it again for the American people.
How would you characterize yourself? Are you a deeply analytical person who has tried to bring out the wrongs in government? Are you a conspiracy theorist? Are you a gadfly? Just tell me how you would define yourself.
Oh, that's interesting. I am a courageous thinker and actor. I focus on the big picture on every issue that matters to the American people in the world. I'm a truly independent investigative journalist as well, with a track record of publishing and exposing truly unconscionable acts by the federal government. My book, October Surprise, was the first of many books on the subject by 3 years and exposed the secret deal to basically steal the election from President Carter by the 1980 Reagan-Bush senior campaign. And I published that in 1989, and that started the ball rolling that resulted in a full subpoena power U.S. House of Representatives investigation.
You've also written and spoken extensively about 9/11.
Yes.
Tell us what your belief, what really happened at 9/11.
Well, it's not my belief. It's my knowledge.
Okay.
It's my knowledge based upon forensic facts. The big picture first, and then we can get down into a few of the really critical details that prove the big picture. The big picture is our federal government has grotesquely lied to the American people about what happened on 9/11. How do we know that? We know that because it is absolutely a proven fact with the forensic evidence that the plane impacts and fires therefrom in the Twin Towers in New York City simply did not bring down those buildings. We know for a fact of this because three separate official seismic records show that there were massive deep basement explosions in both World Trade Centers 1 and 2. In the case of World Trade Center 1, 14 seconds before any plane hit anywhere way up above, and in World Trade Center 2, 17 seconds before. So whoever pre-planted those explosives had to be in control of the planes, because once the explosives went off, the planes had to hit the building as the pretext and cover story for why they came down. We also know that there was military-grade and sulfurated nanothermite salted throughout both World Trade Center 1 and 2 and World Trade Center 7, which came down in a classic controlled demolition at 5:21 p.m. On the afternoon of 9/11. So that's the situation at the World Trade Center. But I'm actually an expert, one of the world's experts, on the Pentagon attack on 9/11. And very briefly, my work, which is in a video and a DVD, which is available on Amazon.com, called Behind the Smoke Curtain, has about 200,000 views right now. Behind the Smoke Curtain proves that the real story at the Pentagon is inside the building, pre-planted, pre-placed explosives, just as at the World Trade Center.
Who would have done that, and why would they have done it?
Well, we know that the Pentagon of the United States, the Department of Defense building, it's the iconic, most secure building probably on the planet. The only people who would be able to plant explosives inside the Pentagon of the United States would be someone who is working for the Pentagon, with the Pentagon.
And what would be the motive of these people?
Well, you would have to ask them that, and we're trying to get them into court big time. Mm-hmm. In fact, you may know that the front page of the New York Times, just in the past few days, the Saudis have been sued by, and this is quite an unbelievable fact, but it is a fact, about 3,000 9/11 victims' families, for a total of over 6,000 9/11 victims' family members. They've sued the Saudis for their involvement in financing the alleged hijackers. And the Saudi government, just the other day, threatened to pull its treasury, to sell its treasury bills, and attempt to seriously damage the American economy if a bill pending, a bipartisan-sponsored bill, pending before the U.S. Congress right now, called JASTA, that's an acronym, J-A-S-T-A. JASTA would pierce the sovereign immunity of the Saudi government for their involvement in 9/11. And both the Bush Jr., Cheney, and Obama administrations have reprehensibly taken the side of the Saudi government against the victims' family members from 9/11.
Now, President Obama recently went to Saudi Arabia, and he was not given the typical greeting
a
head of state, particularly the head of the United States, is given. There were not the top-level diplomats, people mm-hmm. greeting him. How does that relate to some of the stuff you've been just discussing?
Well, that's very interesting. Just before getting on the plane, according to the New York Times today, I believe it's page A27.
That would be April 21st.
April 21st, either the 20th or the 21st of April in the New York Times, it is revealed, and in the Washington Times also, newspaper in the nation's capital. We have learned that just before getting on the plane to go to Saudi Arabia the other day, this week, that President Obama announced that that he would not support the JASTA bill. And his Justice Department has come out for the Saudi government against the victims' family members from 9/11, which is an absolutely reprehensible fact. And those of us in the 9/11 Truth Movement are doing everything we can. Now, let me just say what this has to do with my run for Congress, because believe me, I am not a single-issue candidate, as you will see from my campaign literature and brochure and in this interview. But the relevance of 9/11 Truth, what really happened on 9/11, that there were pre-planted explosives in World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7, not but hit by any plane, and the Pentagon, that the plane impacts were simply the cover story for how those buildings came down. What that shows us is it had to be some kind of an inside job, that the Bush-Cheney administration with other actors had to have been complicit in the attacks on our own people.
That's a pretty heavy allegation.
It's not an allegation.
Okay.
The reason it's not an allegation is there is no other possible explanation for how pre-planted explosives were inside the Pentagon as well as inside World Trade Center 7 before 9/11. And it takes weeks, if not months, to pre-plant them to bring down a building in a controlled demolition. And World Trade Center 7, many people don't know this, in New York City, came down in the afternoon, late afternoon of 9/11. It was effectively a federal building. It wasn't owned by the federal government. But the people who leased, the organizations and agencies, federal agencies, who leased offices in World Trade Center 7 included the largest CIA office outside of Langley, Virginia, the FBI, the Department of Defense, the SEC, and even New York Mayor Giuliani's Emergency Operations Center on the 23rd floor. This building, World Trade Center 7 and the Pentagon, were arguably the most secure buildings on the planet that only insiders could have had access to pre-plant these explosives weeks before, at a minimum, 9/11.
And you say the ones who would know the motives would be those who planted the weaponry or the bombs inside.
Absolutely. And because we know there is a signature on the military-grade and sulfurated nanothermite that is in the dust, and this is according, by the way, to the U.S. Geological Survey, as well as Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in analysis. This is government documents have proven this.
People who, for lack of a better word, espouse theories that don't go with the mainstream are often criticized, or worse. It sounds to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that what you're saying is probably, well, it's not the prevailing analysis of what happened. How do you deal with people who say you're just wrong?
Well, we prove it with the facts.
Okay.
We prove it with the facts, but allow me to say that it's no longer non-mainstream.
Okay.
We're talking about the front page of the New York Times, the Washington Post, et cetera, in the last few weeks. Most people believe that the only official government investigation of 9/11 was the 9/11 Commission. It's very famous, the 9/11 Commission report. That wasn't published until the summer of 2004. Most people don't know that the first official government investigation was by the joint U.S. and U.S. House and Senate Intelligence Committees. They published very quickly after 9/11, after an in-depth investigation of the so-called intelligence failures, which they weren't. And they published in the spring of 2002. This report was about 800 pages, and to this day, the final chapter, which is 28 pages long, is still classified. It was originally classified and censored by the Bush-Cheney administration, and it has continued to this day to be still classified by the Obama administration. However, just before getting on the plane the other day to go to Saudi Arabia, this is very high-level geopolitics, front page of our nation's mainstream newspapers, President Obama announced that he does favor the declassification of the pages, and the President of the United States is the highest declassification authority we have. In these 28 pages, which according to the co-chairman at the time who wrote the report, that it contains the 28 pages, Senator Bob Graham and then Representative Porter Goss, according to them and the majority of members of the 9/11 Commission itself, these pages point to Saudi Arabia as a chief financier. And we're talking about high-level individuals in the government of Saudi Arabia at the time, chief financier of the hijackers on 9/11.
You've devoted a great deal of your time and energy and intelligence to the 9/11 and 2001. Do you ever get frustrated that many people don't agree with you?
Well, actually, this may surprise you, but there are very few people who don't agree with the facts once they see them. Now, I would like to go on the record with what this has to do with the run for Congress.
Sure.
What it has to do, what the truth about 9/11 has to do with the run for Congress and legitimizing the forensic facts about 9/11 has to do with the run for Congress is once the American people understand and are convinced in mass, and that's our goal, that 9/11, the 9/11 attacks were not an outside terrorist attack. They were not. Once they understand that, they will understand that everything that has been justified as a pretext for rolling out the global domination agenda, basically making us into a global empire, unilateral, illegal under international law, aggressive attacks and occupations of foreign nations, and the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, and a minimum of a tripling of our Defense Department, taking money away from all of the domestic side of our federal budget, and we're hurting from that now, that all stems from the official lie of who attacked America on 9/11.
There would be people who say, who are critical of the U.S. government, who would say, we did that long before 9/11. You know, some of our military exercises, yeah. Some of our reaching out, some of the activity in Latin America, Central yeah. America, et cetera. Do you see this as part of a continuing trend, or do you see what's happened post 9/11 as an abject change or movement in how you describe American foreign policy?
Well, it's not just me. All of the spokespersons for the Bush-Cheney administration called it a geopolitical watershed event, that history would be seen before 9/11 and after 9/11. That's their words, not mine. So it's absolutely critical for the American people to understand that everything that's really wrong with this country escalated, massively escalated, because of the official lie of who attacked our country on 9/11. And we are getting very close to breaking through to true mainstream, with 6,000 9/11 victims' family members suing the Saudi government right now.
What are some of the other issues that you feel are resonating in the 20th Congressional District that you're addressing, the elections in early June?
Right.
What are some of the other points that are coming up?
Well, probably the most important in my mind, and I know this is also true from our candidate forums with the other candidates, is, of course, comprehensive immigration reform. And, you know, let's get honest. One of the reasons I'm running as an independent, because I am an independent, is because we know that the two political parties have sold out to big money. We basically don't have a democracy anymore, a functional democracy. Everybody knows we no longer have one person, one vote. We have $1, one vote, because of the sellout of both major political parties. So I am running as a Bernie Sanders independent. And what I mean by that is I agree with his positions on almost every, I can't think of one that I don't, domestic issue. I would vote with the Democratic Progressive Caucus. I would caucus with them, and I would vote the way they do. And Bernie Sanders was the founder of that Democratic Progressive Caucus. I would vote with the Women's Caucus. And with my background, having been the highest ranking official for equality under the law on the basis of gender discrimination or non-discrimination of the federal government, and my courageous acts in Washington to expose the secret plan to destroy equal rights in this country under the law that successfully stopped it, I believe that once I'm in office and I would caucus with the Women's Caucus, that I would probably end up as being one of the leaders of the Women's Caucus.
As someone who was in the Reagan administration, what's your assessment of the Reagan administration's policies toward women?
Oh, my God. Well, I put my entire career, and many people told me at the time, my life on the line. To go public, which I did in the longest fact-based opinion piece, vetted fact-based opinion piece ever published by the Washington Post. It was an entire page, single-spaced. And that was on around August 22nd, 23rd of 1983. It's been reprinted in historic documents of 1983 by Congressional Quarterly. I put everything on the line, including, many people say, my life, to alert the American people to the unconscionable secret plan of the Reagan-Bush senior administration to attempt to destroy all civil rights statutes, the enforcement power of all civil rights statutes, by unbelievably because they called the lack of serious non-gender discrimination laws, because the Reagan administration had killed the Equal Rights Amendment, okay, they were going to try to roll back the enforcement of all of the other non-discrimination laws, like non-discrimination against for race, non-discrimination for ethnicity, etc., to roll them back to the lower level of enforcement of gender discrimination on, if you can believe it, the grounds of equality. This was an unconscionable plan which I exposed and stopped.
What was your relationship with President Reagan in your position as White House policy analyst in the Office of the President?
Mm-hmm.
Did you speak with him frequently, or some of his underlings?
Absolutely. Well, my job was I had two hats, actually, in the West Wing of the Reagan White House. One of them was as the special assistant to the chief domestic policy advisor to the president. His name was Dr. Martin Anderson.
Right, Martin Anderson.
Martin Anderson. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked with Martin Anderson for 6 years or so at the Hoover Institution prior to that as a research associate with him. And we published books together on the military draft as a co-author. So I was the special assistant to the chief domestic policy advisor to President Reagan. And in that position, I was actually in a number of meetings. There are many photographs of me, including on the back of my book, October Surprise, with the president in the Roosevelt Room, in the Cabinet Room, et cetera. Just meetings about all domestic policy.
Did you become a persona non grata at some point in the White House of President Reagan?
Well, if your question is, was I a persona non grata before I resigned? Absolutely not.
Okay.
In fact, on my birthday, I believe it must have been 1981, effectively all of the federal government was at my surprise birthday party. But they went over my moral line, and they went over the moral line of the American people when they had their secret plan to attempt to weaken every civil rights statute on the books in Washington.
Was it shocking for you, because you obviously had a very fine position in the White House, that you reached the conclusion that you had to move on?
Was it shocking to me? What was shocking to me was what they were planning to do. And I made a very deep personal decision to expose it regardless of the consequences to me personally. And I was perfectly aware that I might have been killed.
What would you say were the key bullet points in what you learned that the Reagan administration was allegedly trying to do? What were the things that were most upsetting to you that you felt would be most damaging to the United States?
Well, I mean, I'd appreciate your clarifying that question. Do you mean just on the issue of gender non-discrimination?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just give you a shocking example. The day that the Equal Rights Amendment died, because I was the highest-ranking political appointee for gender non-discrimination in the government, Reagan had appointed me in the White House, double-hatted to the Attorney General's office in the Department of Justice, to identify all federal statutes and regulations, policies, practices, and procedures in all 46 federal agencies and departments that still discriminate against girls and women, which I did, and was published in 7 volumes by the government printing office, which I have in my home here on the Monterey Peninsula. The day that the ERA died, because of my position in the White House and Justice Department, I was invited to the so-called celebration for the death of the Equal Rights Amendment. And at that event, which was a gala dinner at a big hotel in Washington, D.C., Phyllis Schlafly was identified with killing the ERA. She was at the dais. And at the moment that they announced the death of the ERA, the Republican band played Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. I thought that someone had, they might as well have taken a dagger and stuck it into my heart. And I decided at that very moment that I had to do something to get America back on track, no matter what the personal cost to myself.
Your campaign brochure, I'm reading from it now, you're saying America doesn't need to be great again, obviously referring to a key component of Donald Trump's campaign. You say America needs to be America again. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that, and it goes back to the government's lie about who attacked our country on 9/11, I almost feel like Dorothy and Toto getting to Oz. That Dorothy, the most famous line in The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy turns to Toto and she says, "Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore." After 9/11, everything was rolled out. It was obviously pre-planned. It was pre-packaged. And I realized, Toto, I'm not in America anymore. We have become effectively a militarized police state based upon the lie of who attacked our country on 9/11. And many people don't know this. This is in my DVD and YouTube called Behind the Smoke Curtain, The Truth About the Forensic Facts of the Pentagon Attack on 9/11. In Behind the Smoke Curtain, you learn a very little known fact by the general public, and that is that the lie of who attacked our country on 9/11 was used as the excuse to create the first ever combatant battlefield command over mainland United States. It's called NORTHCOM. And they did that very, very, very intentionally with a pre-programmed plan, using 9/11 as the pretext. So we're not in the America we had before 9/11 anymore. And it is my intent to go to Washington and make sure we get back to it.
Let me talk about some of the other issues that have come up in this race and also in the government. The question of the disparity of wealth, the question about difficulty for people to get housing, the question of immigration. If you could give me your position on that. Let me start more specifically. Donald Trump basically has said he wants to round up 11 to 12 million of so-called illegal immigrants. What's your take on that?
Oh, that's reprehensible. I think we should build this huge wall around Donald Trump. Seriously, this man is dangerous. He is a misogynist. He is a bully. He is. He has been paralleled by the president of Mexico with Hitler and Mussolini. He favorably forwarded tweets of Mussolini's quotations. This man is extremely dangerous. Of course, I don't support that. I support comprehensive immigration reform with a guaranteed path to citizenship for all law-abiding illegal immigrants who are in this country today. And let's be honest, that will never happen with the Republicans in control of the House of Representatives. Recently, there was a bipartisan bill that passed the Senate to basically accomplish this in a gradual way, and it was killed in the House of Representatives by the obstructionist Republican Congress in the House of Representatives. And that's one of the reasons, because of the danger of Donald Trump and because of the obstructionism of the U.S. House of Representatives, which I am running for office in this congressional district, I beg people, no matter who the individual candidate is, please do not vote for any Republican in this election. Please vote for an independent. It's your best hope. It's your best hope to actually break things open in Washington, D.C., and to save our country.
But yet you decided to run as an independent rather than as a Democrat.
Yes.
Why is that?
Because I am an independent.
Okay.
I am an independent. I believe that both the Democratic, well, I don't just believe it. I know it. We all know it. The Democratic and Republican parties have, because of the nature of the beast in Washington, they've sold out to the special interests, to the corporate interests, and they're no longer really independent of these interests. So I would not, in office, I would not be under the control of any party whip, although I would caucus and vote on most domestic policy issues with a progressive Democratic caucus founded by Bernie Sanders.
Housing is a main concern to many people. Central Coast, the 20th Congressional District, is a very expensive place to live. Do you have any ideas of how you might remedy that?
How I would remedy...
Or try to remedy it.
Try to remedy the paucity of affordable housing. Well, I have to answer that question from the point of view of being a member of Congress. What you can do in Congress is you can submit bills, and you can lobby your fellow members of Congress for subsidies for this congressional district for that particular purpose. And Sam Farr was actually amazingly successful. He did a great job. I mean, I ran against him in 93.
Which was when he was first elected.
When he was first elected. I ran against him in 1993. He was elected. He had, you know, I think $700,000, and I had a few thousand at the time. But I did receive more votes per dollar spent by far. I did the math, than any of the other 26 or so candidates. But I do think I'm glad Sam won. He's done a good job. I don't agree with him on TPP, for instance, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I don't think there are enough protections anywhere close for protections for our environmental laws, protections for our workers, etc. I don't think that any treaty should supersede federal laws that protect Americans.
What about NAFTA? That's become an issue.
Well, I think that NAFTA has been abused in that way. NAFTA is a fact of life in Washington, and I think it needs to be reformed along these very lines. We need stronger protections for American workers and for the environment.
Let's move ahead. January of next year, let's say you're elected. What's the first thing you're going to try to do or do?
Well, the first thing I would do would be to contact the Progressive Democratic Caucus, sign up with them. And quite frankly, the next thing that I would do would be to tell the truth in what's called general orders or special orders on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. I would place into the congressional record the forensic facts about who attacked America on 9/11.
Looking at your opponents, Jimmy Panetta, Casey Lucius, Joe Williams, Jack Digby, what points, if any, do you find resonate with you that you agree with, and what are their positions that you really find abhorrent?
Oh, abhorrent. That's a strong word.
Or you don't like.
That I don't like. I don't know if I go abhorrent. Let me just say that all five candidates running for office, I think, are wonderful, fine people. I do. I've met them. I've been in about a half a dozen candidate forums with more coming up, a lot more coming up in May. We're all decent, highly qualified people. I honestly believe I am the most qualified. Look at my record. However, where I agree mostly is with Jimmy Panetta on his positions on domestic issues. I abhor his position on drone attacks. Now, everyone knows that Jimmy Panetta, and he's independently qualified from his father, but everyone knows he's running on Leon Panetta's coattails. Leon Panetta, of course, having been CIA director, representing our congressional district for years, and being Clinton's White House chief of staff, then under Obama becoming CIA director and Secretary of Defense. But what many people don't understand or know is that Obama delegated the total authority to call the shots on drone attacks that have taken out, by the most recent independent study, a minimum of 1,000 innocent civilians in Afghanistan and Pakistan, including hundreds of children. So Leon Panetta personally called the shots on every Hellfire missile from every drone over Afghanistan when he was CIA director and over Pakistan when he was Secretary of Defense. His son, who is running for this seat, that's the only Democrat, James, Jimmy Panetta. Many people don't know that when Jimmy Panetta was in Navy Reserves and Naval Intelligence Reserves in Afghanistan, that his job was to identify so-called high-value targets that were then taken out by these unconscionable and under international law grotesquely illegal drone attacks. So father and son are the drone program. I consider it unconscionable. It is illegal under international law. And President Obama has refused to this day the calls by even his own top Democratic members of Congress to release the so-called finding that he claims justifies the or attempts to justify the, quote, legality, unquote, of these drone attacks. And he refuses to release it because it cannot be justified.
How about the Republican candidate, Casey Lucius, who's a council member from the city of Pacific Grove?
The city of Pacific Grove. Actually, Casey and I have a lot in common. We both worked at the Naval Postgraduate School in slightly different positions for many years. I believe she was there 7 years. I was there 15, 16 years.
I believe she taught at the Naval War College.
You're correct. She taught at the Naval War College, which is has a co-located campus at the Naval Postgraduate School. And my master's level certification in national security decision making, coincidentally or not coincidentally, is in the same department that she taught in, actually, national security affairs. So we share many, many years and a devotion to the Naval Postgraduate School and its mission. It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
Peace and Freedom candidate Joe Williams, another of your opponents.
Yeah. I like Joe. In my mind, it's technically Peace and Freedom Party, but in my mind, there are three of us independents running, myself, Joe Williams, and Jack Digby. Jack Digby is a technical independent like I am. So on the ballot, it would say, under party affiliation, it would say nonpartisan or none, or independent, I'm not sure which. I think it will actually say none. I like Joe, but he doesn't have the experience that I have anywhere close.
Joe or Jack?
Well, I'm answering Joe first.
Okay, very good.
I like them both. I like all the candidates who are running as individuals. I particularly appreciate Joe's position on every domestic issue. We totally agree. And after our candidate forums, we've talked in the parking lot about it. Jack Digby was a pleasant surprise to me, but he really is an amateur. I mean, he's got a lot of maturing to do before he should be elected to office.
Political maturing.
But yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Are there any issues that in the campaign, Barbara, that we haven't discussed that you would like to bring up?
Are there any issues in the campaign? Well there's a whole slate of issues.
We'll take another 6 hours. And we'll
yeah, right, exactly. I think that the most important message I'd like to get out to people is if you vote for Honegger for Congress, I'm the one candidate who's back. She's back. She's running again. Ran in 93 the last time the seat was open. I'm running again because I'm serious about representing the voters and all of the citizens of our congressional district. And if you vote for me for Congress, you will get the best of both worlds. You will get a true independent who will act courageously and expose and fix what is wrong with the federal government. I'll do everything in my power to do it. I've got a track record of succeeding in Washington already, having done that on many issues. And you will also get someone who will vote the same way that Jimmy Panetta will vote. The same way that Jimmy Panetta will vote. I'm running as the Bernie Sanders independent for this office, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, Lou, and encourage everyone, no matter who you vote for, to please vote in the primary on June 7th.
Just one final question. You ran in 93.
Yes.
You're running in 2016. Were you motivated to run by the fact that it will be an open seat, or is there anything specifically that you said, I've got to run now?
Well, honestly, because the seat is open, it's extremely difficult to win against an incumbent. Everyone knows that. So I waited until there was a real chance, and best of both worlds, I've got all this additional experience all these decades.
Barbara Honegger, thank you very much for your time and your patience and for answering all my questions. This is Lewis Leader for KAZU 90.3 FM. We're in the process of interviewing each of the five candidates for the 20th Congressional District.
Thank you, Lou.
You're welcome.